So I'm very nervous. So I've got my notes. There's a lot of paper, but it's really big writing. So So hi everyone. I thought I'd just tell you about my life, my life currently. So as a funeral celebrant, I write and lead funerals. And I love everything about it. It feels as if it's my soul work, very heart-opening work. It feels as if I'm working for my higher self, some kind of deep wisdom, some ancient wisdom that I didn't know was there, and my Buddha nature. I started this work just over a year ago, and I've had the privilege of doing 34 funerals so far. Buddhist funerals occasionally, but mainly funerals which have a spiritual feel, but are not religious, or not explicitly so. Often I'm requested to read a prayer or lead a hymn, and I'll gladly do that. So I meet families, and by families I mean groups of close friends as well, at a really tender time when they've just lost someone very close to them. And I listen as they talk about that person. And quite often they'll talk about life in general as well, or just anything. And I think my sense of that is that they're trying to get a grip on the bigger picture of their lives now without that loved one in it, without their partner, their child, their friend, their grandma. So I listen and take notes, and when they feel that they've said enough, I go home and I write the most fitting ceremony that I can to honour the person who's died, but also to support those who are still living in this phase of their grief journey. And I see funerals very much as being for those who are present and still there and left behind. On the day of the funeral, I lead everybody into the space, which is usually a chapel in a crematorium or to a graveside, and I deliver the ceremony that we've co-created together. There's a lot of communication with myself and the family in the time between meeting them and then the ceremony, because I like to try and involve people as much as possible in co-creating it. So in a way, I'm bursting to talk about my work. I love it so much. And my youngest son, who's 12, says sometimes at the dinner table, if we've got friends around, when's the death conversation going to start? And I noticed last year at the international retreat, I was bounding up to people and asking them what they did for a living, not only because I was interested in that, but I really wanted them to ask me. And sometimes they didn't, and I could feel my ego jumping up and down. And in thinking about giving this talk today, I noticed a reticence as well, a holding back, wanting to keep myself small, and a fear of being held up as special or lovely for what I do, and even believing that myself. I receive a lot of praise, a lot of heartfelt thanks from families after a funeral and during the whole process. And it's so important to me that I stay alert to my ego, that I don't get hungry for that praise, and that I'm not feeding my ego with it. I aspire to be like the rock in the Dhammapada, not swayed by praise or blame. It's also important, I know, that I can hear and receive that praise or those thanks as a gift that I'm being offered, and I really get that. But that's also where my work lies. Alongside another challenging aspect, which is not to allow my soul work to become busy work. I can so often get overly busy and overwhelmed, and when that happens, I close in on myself. And this work requires an openness. It requires a spaciousness in which my ideas can flow. a space in which to create an offering to the family. And it often feels to me like I'm making an offering to something much bigger than we know as well. So the feeling, the gentle urge behind it all, is the Bodhisattva ideal for me. And a sense of interconnection, as ego and conditioning are being stripped away gradually. And all I need to do is to allow my heart response, my deep desire to relieve the suffering for those who request my help. I feel that really strongly. On a retreat a few years ago, I heard this version of the Four Reminders. Life has inevitable difficulties. No one can control it all. This body is impermanent. Death is certain. The karma I create shapes the course of my life. This human birth is precious. An opportunity to awaken. Death is certain. That really scared me, and it still does. It felt on that retreat that I somehow got a slightly deeper understanding of that than before, or I felt it more deeply. Not so much my own death and all that I want to do, including seeing my children grow up, especially. But unlike many of you, I imagine, I have yet to go through significant losses. My mum, my children, my partner, my sister, my dad, and my closest friends are going to die. How will I cope? I was aware of a profound fear arising in me, even in my dreams at times, full of papancha and anxiety. So my way of coping was to walk towards it, towards death, to try and immerse myself more in order to try and get a feel for what it might mean. It's so huge. And a few months later, by magic, I met a celebrant. I didn't even know celebrancy was a thing or a job. And it was like a light bulb moment for me. It felt suddenly really important that there was an urgency, there was a way that I could make a difference, not only to others, but to myself as well. I could be closer to death and to grief, and it might help. I'd recently experienced 3 or 4 funerals as very impersonal and bland, not helpful in any sense. I'd also experienced the Sangha-led funerals for 2 friends in Manchester at the Buddhist Centre, and marvelled at how exceptionally personal and different they were. I wanted to know the laws governing funerals. What was possible? What was the scope for creativity and individuality? And this was when I decided to train to be a celebrant. I felt it would be a job I could do well. Communication, it seems, is one of my strengths. And I know I'm most engaged when communication is open and honest. I enjoy being with people. I find being human and how we manage that and how we relate to each other endlessly fascinating. In my work, I meet such a diverse range of people of all ages and from all areas of life. And their emotions are to the fore, raw, true, exposed and very real. And this feels extremely precious to me. In a world where so much is not real, we have fake news, deceit, pretense, we turn to false refuges, we can show our emotions by clicking on little yellow faces, we crave likes, friend requests, we can block friends. Keats' words spring to mind: beauty is truth, truth, beauty. I'm learning through witnessing others' grief that even when in the depths of despair, people who've been bereaved can talk They can carry on, they can laugh, they can tell stories and memories. And that, all that, can even be really helpful and good to do. And that maybe it's made easier by talking to someone like me, a stranger who they know is used to sitting and witnessing raw emotion. Witnessing sobbing or stillness. Hearing about the unexpected feelings, the guilt, the relief, the anger, and the sorrow, as well as the happy times. It also seems to me that at times grief can bring a richness to somebody's life, like a seam of gold through the deepest rock. The Dharma, my practice, really helps me to stay present with whatever arises. Sometimes as I listen, I want to contribute, to ask questions, to direct the conversation in some way. But I know from experience that simply listening allows a flow. And if I wait, then often the unexpected will arise. I use mindfulness a lot. So when I visit a family standing at the front door, before I ring the bell, I try to bring them to mind. I often only have their name. But I try to let go of any assumptions that I already have, because I know now from experience that they'll just get completely blown away by the truth of what's happened when I actually meet the people. And everything that's in my mind already is just mind-made. It's stories, and it's not going to be anything near the truth of what they might offer. I vow to be mindful in my speech, and in my thoughts, and in my actions, and then I ring the doorbell. And my aim is to stay aware of what is in the room, everything I'm presented with my direct experience. And my intention is to bring metta, to bring loving kindness. And sometimes it's not easy, it's not always easy. And at the same time, I need to offer practical advice about the day of the funeral and what is possible. And I need to take all the responsibility for the ceremony so that they can let go of any worries about that they might have. And what about those who have died? I can remember them all. And each story is a very unique and precious one that I would love to share with you. But to just give you a flavour of the diversity of those who I've worked for and honoured. There was the 83-year-old woman who at 16 had been a professional jazz trombonist in the 1950s. There was the 86-year-old woman who had worked hard in factories all her life. The 48-year-old world-class champion kickboxer, held in very high esteem, who took his own life. And the 25-year-old girl, such a significant friend and support to so many, a shining future ahead of her, taken by the force of nature and found under snow. During this funeral, for the young woman of 25, with over 200 people present, of all ages, as I turned to face the coffin, to face her, and spoke to her on behalf of everyone, I suddenly had an overwhelming sense of how rich my life is now, doing what I do. What a privilege, what a gift to be standing there, speaking on behalf of those who can't, saying the words they want to say to their beloved daughter, sister, niece, close friend. It's hard, very hard, holding the space while others fall apart. I have a heart and body response to their distress, and I often need to conjure up Green Tara standing beside me. But it feels so important, so necessary that space is held and held well. and those words are spoken, that I stay grounded and steady and have the capacity to help in the way that I can, so that we can all acknowledge the reality of what's happened, that things have changed beyond belief, that pain and sadness is overwhelming in that moment, and yet life will still go on somehow. There's a togetherness, a community feel, and a huge amount of love in the room. I feel very grateful for the Buddha's teaching on impermanence, and at times like this I can lean into it, and I know that things will change for us all. No one can weep forever. I treasure these words by Rilke on impermanence. Let everything happen to you, beauty and terror. Just keep going. No feeling is final. I don't believe grief is something we get over or go through. I can see that it manifests or is felt differently for all of us, and differently from minute to minute, day to day. I witness the crippling effect of it. I hear about the nighttime ruminations, the fear of future losses, the bad days and the better days too. I left that funeral for the 25-year-old, drove for a few minutes, and then sat in a lay-by in my car, still in the cemetery, and allowed my feelings. I was surprised at what arose. I cried, but more than sorrow, there was anger. I felt angry that those parents were having to go through such pain. It was so traumatic and seemed so unfair. She was so young and they would never see her again. She shouldn't have died. This shouldn't be happening. Parents shouldn't lose their children. And then from the depths, another girl came to mind. Janet, who drowned in a tragic accident at only 16. If she'd lived, she'd be 59 and my sister-in-law. We never met. Our boys never got to have her as an auntie. I was angry that my partner, his siblings, and their gentle, softly spoken, loving parents had been thrown headlong, suddenly, into that pain and trauma. And I wondered how on earth they'd coped. I sat with this anger for quite some time, but very slowly I began to realise that I was making it worse by resisting the reality of what had happened. Not that feeling angry was wrong, of course not. That was what arose, and it was there, and it was raw. It was my real feeling. But what if I could bring some acceptance and surrender to what had happened? Then I could move forward and into mourning and compassion for myself, as well as for everyone else involved. So that's what I did. In my car in the lay-by in the cemetery, I sat and melted away the anger with my hand on my heart and breathed and cried with deep compassion. Sometimes someone will get in touch because they are dying and they'd like to have a hand in their own funeral, planning their own funeral. I've been blown away by people's courage in letting go, wanting to get on and make sure they request the funeral that they want. My experience of working in this way with people near to death is that they are fully engaged. They're not using the funeral planning as a distraction from their fear. Far from it. They have faith in the medics to keep their pain under control, and in most cases have said, "I'm not frightened of dying. I only fear for my family." How could this not be a rich jewel in my life? To sit beside someone in their final weeks or days and be trusted with their deepest wishes and words for their loved ones, to witness such acceptance and courage. Death is so much part of life. All of life is there in being with a person who is dying and with their closest ones in their grief. This is the heart of life. This matters to me. This is reality. I'm not at that point of acceptance yet. I have all the theory about things changing, impermanence, death, my death, even my children's death, but I'm resistant. We cling on to so much in our lives, don't we? Shoring up our egos and our sense of security and separate selves in sometimes bizarre ways. Clinging on, it's hard to let go, to fully understand that life involves suffering, change, impermanence, and sometimes suddenly. It took an incident recently to startle me into a deeper understanding that the moment of death is uncertain. An incident in which I, very suddenly and unexpectedly, came dangerously near to my own death. Reflecting afterwards, running through the what ifs, I felt a new stark realization of how sudden death can be. And I still daily feel grateful for my life and that I'm alive. But that's a whole other talk. 2 weeks ago, I sat in my mum's garden thinking about how life will be without her. I still find that almost impossible to imagine or to bear. And I also still assume that she will die before me, which of course may not be true. But my resistance is shifting, like shifting sand, very slowly, grain by grain. By witnessing others, I am in a less fearful place than I was a year or so ago. Working so close to death is having a transformational effect, and it's enabling me to at least try to live more for today, to express my gratitude and love, to compose my quarrels, to recognise that I have free will and that I can choose in how I spend my time. I'm more able to say no to things that won't support me to wake up. I'm more able to listen to my heart and to say yes, to seeking what is true and beautiful, to dwell more and more in the three jewels of the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, and in my Dharma life. Thank you.